Can the power dynamic between a funder and a grantee ever be equitable? In today's episode, we have public health professional Dr. Sapna Surendran, who tells us about a time when a difficult relationship with a donor, combined with her own internal biases, led to an important program failing. Eventually, her organization ended up losing the funder as well. Hi, I'm Tanaya, and you're listening to Failure Files, a podcast by India Development Review, or IDR. Our show features highly relatable narratives of failure by people working on complex issues of social change. Their stories remind us how the path to resilience cannot be built on success alone. Failure is a necessary condition for it. And now, let's hear from Sapna.
It is said that failure is a stepping stone to success. I don't know if it holds true in every scenario, but I know this much. Two major failures that shaped my outlook, attitude, and perception to life were when I lost a semester in the final year of dental college, an academic failure, and when I got divorced, a personal failure. Both these failures dented my self-confidence, and the road to recovery was long, arduous, and not without long-lasting damage. After bouncing back from these, however, I was convinced that I had the innate ability to handle missteps and failures. I was filled with hubris that I could not be shaken easily by life. Little did I know that I would soon be proven wrong. It started with me taking on a new project. Towards the end of 2018, I volunteered to take up an additional project within my organization. I had worked on projects related to tuberculosis for more than 4 years and was eager to learn about managing other disease portfolios, as well as increase my technical expertise on non-communicable diseases. The project involved remote management of field operations, an area I wanted to return to after many years of technical advisory work. A big incentive was also the opportunity to work with a funder who was counted as one of the leading global health donors. The role was primarily a front-facing one with the donor and at a strategic level as well. I assumed I would be able to balance the project with my existing work responsibilities. Our initial discussions with the donor went well. Trouble started brewing when they wanted us to operationalize a digital tool they had developed. Based on my team's initial groundwork and local intelligence we had received, we understood our target audience, doctors, were not keen on using an app or any digital platform to streamline their health records and for subsequent follow-up as well. We communicated our apprehensions to the funders about going down this route, but they were not amenable to our suggestions. They had invested millions of dollars in software development and designing the user interface. This, coupled with mixed uptake of the application in other settings, made them keen to try it in our setting as well. So we went ahead. From this point onwards, all discussions were just a series of arguments between me and our point of contact within the donor office. And because we had a very timeline-driven donor, we were faulted every time deliverables and project outputs did not meet their expectations. Initially, I did not take many of these issues seriously and felt that they were part of the regular challenges we all face in operations and project management. I simply had to learn to take it in my stride and work better and smarter. Needless to say, I only became more defensive and aggressive, not just with the donor, but also in the way I was working with my teams. As the months progressed, however, our relationship, specifically my relationship with the funding agency, deteriorated. I could not shake away the thought that ultimately many projects tend to be donor-driven and top-down without the necessary grounding in reality. It was clear I was becoming more aggressive than required, perhaps due to the disproportionate level of attachment to the project and my own strong ideas against donor-driven, top-down projects with a dash of neocolonialism. The project was designed to change the existing practices of patients with respect to management of a disease. As with any implementation project, the initial few months of operations took longer than expected to establish and were not showing numbers in terms of patient enrollment as per the project plan and donor expectations. The donor came down heavily on us, forcing us to change strategies every month. As a project lead, I stuck to my guns on how we needed to allow each activity to take root before we switched to another strategy. Needless to say, I only became more defensive and aggressive, not just with the donor, but also with the way I was working with my teams. After nearly 7 months of operations, the donor expressed frustration over how we hadn't achieved milestones at the rate we had committed in the proposal. They threatened to close us down, both the project as well as pipeline funding for other initiatives. This phase was both organizationally and personally very turbulent for me. As a well-reputed international organization, we had to switch to damage control mode. For me, it was a huge feeling of failure and loss that I had let down my team and my country leadership who had faith in me. It was also a loss of face for me personally, because in the past, I had never led a project that had drawn so much flak. During the entire ordeal of project implementation, I had persisted and soldiered on, making as many changes in the project design and team management as possible. But it was clear to me and the others that I was caught in a vicious cycle of negativity and unable to be productive. The stress manifested as anxiety attacks and insomnia. After a month and a half of being in the eye of the storm, I introspected and decided I would step down from the project. I was unable to cope up with increasing demands and the toll that it was taking on my physical and mental health. When I drafted the email to my directors explaining my stance, I was overwhelmed with a sense of relief once the email left my inbox and the country leadership accepted my decision. A day or two later, when I was zipping away on my scooty, I fell into the familiar pattern of humming and riding. At that very moment, I realized I had stopped humming entirely in the recent months, ever since I had taken on the project. After I stepped down, I reflected on my failure. I tried to understand where I went wrong and what I could have done better, and also what I did right. I realized I had strong biases against the donor's approach, my ego tussle with the point of contact, and my stubbornness of wanting to do the project like it was my very own startup. These didn't help. In retrospect, so much emotional investment was perhaps not warranted. During the course of this project, I'd also neglected my main workstream in tuberculosis, and deliverables had suffered. I realized I was not very good at multitasking. Some other lessons I derived from this episode were: 1. Overpromising and under-delivering. In the quest to secure grants, it is a general practice in the social sector to commit numbers we know we cannot easily achieve and without sufficient understanding of the context. 2. Much to my ire, but honestly, I realized that the relationship between a donor or an investor and the recipient will always remain asymmetric. To assume otherwise is to be naive, and the fight to turn the tide the other way around is a long haul one. 3. Donor management is an art and a skill that I should have perhaps honed long ago. As one grows into a leadership role, it takes enormous work to ensure that the interests of the organization and the teams take precedence over the leader's ego. In due course, I made my peace with the whole phase and moved on. I am glad I prioritized myself over a project though, and I walked away with the core belief that nothing is worth the cost of my own well-being. From an organizational standpoint, I was replaced with someone who had more operations experience and a better knack for managing donors. Sadly, despite all the efforts put in by everyone, including the leadership teams, the donor pulled the plug on the project earlier this year. To paraphrase them, there is no point in flogging a dead horse.
Failure Files is produced by Disha Acharya, Pallavi Deshpande, Rachita Vora, Shreya Adhikari, and me, Tanaya Jagtiani. This podcast is part of a larger initiative at IDR, where alongside 15 partners, we are creating a space for candid conversations around failures and social impact. To read more about this growing movement, check us out at idronline.org. You can also share your own failure story with us at writetous@idronline.org. Thank you for listening, and see you next week.